Greetings and welcome to Tapestry's Empowered to Connect podcast. I'm your host, Chris Turner. Joining me today are Ryan and Kayla North. Hi, guys.
Hey, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
I wanted to have you guys on today so we could talk about the subject of how frequency and intensity of our kids' behavior dictates the frequency and intensity of our response. So what do you guys think about that?
I think that's a hard concept to grasp.
Right.
Because my natural instinct is to want behavior to just stop. Mm-hmm. Right. Think about how many times as a parent you just say, stop that now.
Right.
You use the word stop. Like no and stop are like the two most used words by parents. Mm-hmm. And we lose sight of the fact that if our kids are really, really dysregulated, I think we lose sight of the fact that they are sounding the distress alarm at like DEFCON 1 level.
Right.
I know I do. When I say we, I have to speak for myself. When I'm watching my child struggle, I want them to stop, and I lose sight of the fact that the intensity of their behavior is directly correlated to the intensity of the distress. You know what I mean by that?
Right.
Yeah. I think when I first heard, I think it was Darren Jones, and he said the intensity, frequency, and duration of behaviors has to be met with the same intensity, duration, and frequency of the interventions. I was like, that's revolutionary to me because I know all these strategies and I know all the things that I'm supposed to do with my kids, but I want it to work like the first time and I don't want to have to do it again.
Right.
You know, I want to use a compromise and everything goes well. And then maybe tomorrow I'll use another compromise, but I don't want to have to do a compromise. And then 10 minutes later, there's another situation and we're doing choices here. And then there's another situation and I'm using all these different interventions one after another. And I'm like, it's exhausting.
You feel like you're going to run out of tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, you do. But it's what our kids need. I have kids that have been home for varying lengths of time and that have varying degrees of needs. And of course it all like ebbs and flows, right? So we have seasons where the intensity of the behaviors has just ramped up around a birthday or we've had some major change around our house recently and we've seen behaviors increase, particularly for one of our kiddos. And so we've had to increase the interventions we've needed to use. And so because of that, you know, it gets exhausting and you just are like, can you just stop,
right.
Please just stop, you know? But I do notice when I am very intentional about it, I find that it helps this child calm and it helps this child get regulated again. And so it's worth it, but it is exhausting. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think exhausting is a good word,
right?
Because it's such a bad place to be. Because when you're exhausted, nothing good happens there, right?
Right.
Don't drive when you're that tired. Don't operate heavy machinery that tired.
Don't parent when you're that tired.
Don't parent when you're that tired. I was just going to say that. And I think one of the ways that you can keep yourself from being exhausted is to remember that you have to stick with your child through the behavior, right? If I can mentally grasp that concept, then I can be more focused in the interaction with the child, because I think that the exhaustion is born from, oh, let me try that. I tried it once, it didn't work, so then I'll try this, and it didn't try once, and you're just trying to scan like all the 25 tools and like trying to pick one, like I have some sort of mental Rolodex. And I get that everybody under 30 doesn't know what I'm talking about right now. but if we can remember that the intensity of the interaction has to match the intensity of the behavior, for me at least, that does help keep me from flailing. Mm-hmm. So you know, like when you're in the water and you watch Michael Phelps swim, and it's just kind of when they have this like, you know, the camera that's like almost at pool level that just runs along with the swimmer at the Olympics, it's almost beautiful to watch, just to watch him cut through the water with such grace. And then you think about how that doesn't look like he's working very hard. Mm-hmm. But then when you're like in this messing around in the pool and just flailing and going, that you just get so worn out. I think parenting's like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to remember And to say that Phelps isn't intense in his swimming would be wrong.
Right.
But he's cutting through the water so gracefully because he's so focused on what he's doing. And I think that's what parenting needs, because I know I lose my focus and I forget about the kid that's in front of me. And all of a sudden, it's not a child with a traumatic past and a child with adverse experiences. It is a poorly behaved child. And we go from going, well, what do you need to stop? To, I wonder what is behind this behavior, to don't be a brat. And you know, all these words that we assign to kids. Anyhow.
I think for me, it's I lose sight of the team mentality. Me and my child against the problem.
Yeah.
And it becomes a little more adversarial between me. You know, it's not that anymore. It's now me against my kid and his behavior. And
yeah.
I think that's something that we need, as parents, need to recognize. We don't fall into that trap. And keep it, you and your child, working towards a resolution to get them regulated again.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times, like I said, when you lose your focus is when you struggle the most. And if I can mentally accept that this interaction might last 30 minutes, might last an hour, if I could just mentally accept that on the front end, it is amazing what you can do if you will accept the reality of your situation. The reality of the situation is some of our kids' behaviors cannot be brought down, de-escalated by just saying, would you like to try that again? I'll give you two choices. You know, those work in a lot of cases. In a lot of cases, they don't. So I'm trying to think of an example. You know, there's the John Nathaniel video that everybody's seen, right? Where young Mandy Howard has a starring role in that. But she's like, she must say John Nathaniel like, I don't know, 117 times
it's
in 3 minutes. But she never gets flustered.
Yeah.
She never gets flustered. She never loses sight of what's important. And important is connecting with that child emotionally, because that is the only way, and she's right, that's the only way she gets to the point they want to get to, and they get to that valley, is by being together, right? So Psalm 23, David talks about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. It says, and I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And I think we have to remember that in parenting, that for our children to get through these valleys where they're really, really struggling, that they need to have David's perspective and look at the parents and go, because even though we're just really struggling together, for them to understand that I am with them and I won't leave their side, the way that David was confident that the Lord would not leave his side, is what got him through the valley. And I think that's important with our children, because I think that can get them through the valley of that moment.
That reminds me of one particular foster child that we had, and she wasn't with us for a very long time, and we were pretty new to connected parenting. In a sense, we had had really small children, and so we had not dealt with very many verbal kids. So we were really good at connecting with nonverbal kids, and we'd kind of mastered that skill. And then we got this really verbal child that was also really aggressive. She was physically aggressive.
She punched me once.
She did. And she lashed out not just at us, but at our kids. And so we recognized that this was a child that was in distress. So we at least were, you know, able to recognize she was in distress and recognize that she needed us to help her. But we kind of had to figure out what exactly she needed.
Right.
And what we finally figured out was she really needed us to be with her to help her regulate in those moments of stress. Like, because when she would get escalated the most was when, say, when we would leave the room. She was almost five. So she was, you know, it was like a few weeks before her fifth birthday. And so when we would leave the room, that's when things would go crazy, right? So if we went in the other room to go to the bathroom and come back and somebody had gotten hurt while we were gone. So we finally realized we needed her to be near us all the time to kind of help her regulate. And it was exhausting. It was tiring, but it helped. And she was with us. And I think had she been with us longer, she was really only with us for a few weeks, but had she stayed with us longer, I mean, just in those couple of weeks, we saw a change in her from this child that was very highly stressed. She was beginning to feel safe, and she was beginning to, we were seeing a decrease in the behaviors. And I think it was directly related to the fact that we were right there and could help her get regulated in that moment, because we had to increase the intensity of our interventions with her. Mm-hmm. We couldn't just wait until the moment of conflict. We had to be pouring into her constantly, and she needed to know it wasn't because she was in trouble that she was close to us. It was that we needed to be right there to help her when things started going wrong, because it was little things that would set her off, mm-hmm. and they would turn into really big things. And I think that was a really, for us, was a really good learning opportunity, because we really saw the difference that it could make in just a really short amount of time. I mean, in a few weeks' time, we were able to see significant changes just by bringing her close.
I think you raised a really good point. I was thinking about how when I hear the word intensity, I somehow correlate that with like explosive,
right.
and big and really, really difficult. But intensity can also mean, like, you know, we've had times where one of our sons is just really, really struggling. And when he struggles, he lashes out at people physically and verbally. And so one of the things that, you know, one of those little phrases that stuck in my head is like, keep your child close when they need you the most.
Right.
And so so we do that. And so I said to him, hey buddy, we were going to my parents for lunch. It was on Sunday. And I said, hey, buddy, you're going to have to be dad's buddy for the rest of the afternoon. And so kind of where I go, you got to go. We're just going to be together, me and you, right? And so that, while that doesn't present as a really intense thing to do,
right.
having like he's probably six at the time, having a six-year-old be with you for a couple of hours in the afternoon is really, really hard to do, because it's not like you're saying, well, dude, you're sitting at the table by me, because it's not that he's being punished. It's recognizing that he needs to be close to somebody mm-hmm. who's safe and can help him regulate. So if he wants to go play outside, well, then you got to go play outside.
Right.
If he wants to play with Legos, then you got to go play with Legos. And it's not just the child that is being loud and disrespectful and maybe physical and storming out, and you can't keep their attention. It is like exhausting just trying to keep up with this idea of, buddy, we're going to be close. It's me and you this afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes, like I said, I kind of like get misled by the word intense, because I think explosive, but intense and explosive are not synonyms.
Right.
Although I've decided that they are in terms of behavior. So that intensity can just be being intentional. It can be intense being intentional. I also like intensity to me also means like length, right, of time involved. And so when we think in terms of intensity of behavior with the kiddos, two things come to mind. One is whatever the moment requires. So the intensity and frequency means that whenever it happens, for however long it happens, you're there to help them through that difficult moment. But also intensity and frequency in terms of longevity. Saying, you know, you came home at 4, and I realize that you're 14 today and we're struggling with things, but I have to have the same intensity that I had when you were 4. It can't be that my empathy wanes. It
right.
can't be that my compassion wanes. And I think keeping your compassion at the level that it needs to be and having that empathy for your children where they need you to be, I think that is intense too. And I think that sometimes we lose sight of that, because we can call up every adoptive and foster parent we know, and they will all tell the same version of the story. Yeah, their behaviors bug me a lot more today than they did on day one. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because their compassion has waned over time. It's that the intensity of the investment that they were willing to make in the relationship the day their child came home is not the same. And I'm not saying that in all cases that makes us bad people. You know, since that 4-year-old boy came home and he's now 14, other children have come home, and we've had career changes and we've moved, and things have just, you know, life happens to people, but you have to stay focused. There's that word again, right? You have to stay focused. You have to stay, remember the child, that scared little 4-year-old, that the first night he slept in my house. In a lot of ways, he's more connected and he feels safer, but some version of that scared for little 4-year-old still lives inside my son.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a new little 4-year-old at our house right now, and I find that she's a kid from a hard place, and she is struggling to kind of find where her place is here and right. how, you know, how she fits into the mix of all the kids that are here and stuff.
Which can be really intimidating.
It can, yeah, for sure. And we got a lot of big personalities, and she's pretty much been an only child, and so to come into a situation with all these kids, she's kind of struggling to fit in. So I find that I have a lot more compassion with her than I do with some of my kids, you know. And I find that, like for instance, today she went into the bathroom and. Held on to the spout in the bathroom and turned the water on and shot water all over the bathroom, the walls, the floor, into the hallway. I mean, it was everywhere. And she came and got me. Now, what you have to understand about this little one is she never admits when she does something wrong. Like, I didn't do it, you know, like it a lot of kids happened. Do. It just happened. It just fell off the shelf. She I don't know some, what happened.
She had something in her hand the other day, and Kayla walked and said, what happened? She went, wasn't me.
Yeah. It's literally in her hand.
She had the evidence in her hand.
Yes. And so she came to me, and she said, I need a towel. And I thought she was in the bathroom washing her hands, right? And so I said, there's a towel hanging in the bathroom. She goes, no, it's on the floor, too. And I said, well, let me come see it. And I went in there, and I think had it been any of my other children, I wouldn't have had as much compassion.
Mom might have flipped her lid.
I might have flipped my lid when I saw this
mess. I'd like to affirm you in this moment.
And so, but when I walked in there, because we've really been working on, if something happens, you're not in trouble, just come get me and don't just leave the mess, you know, because right. we've had a few other mishaps where we just went in and we knew who did it. And so, but this was the first time she'd come to me and gotten me to tell me, I need you to help me clean this mess up. Right. And so I just went in and I was praising her for coming to get me to help clean the mess up. And after the fact, I was like, man, I don't think I would have been as compassionate with my other kids had they done that, you know? And I thought, but she's been in our home for just, you know, a couple of months now. And she's just learning all of these things. And so I find it's a lot easier for me to have compassion with her than it is for our other kids, even though they need compassion. They've got things that are going on that are causing them to be dysregulated at different times, you know? Changes, schools back in session, or, you know, birthdays and holidays and all that kind of stuff. But because they've all been with me so much longer, and they've been in our home so much longer, I find my compassion just isn't there. And I struggle to use the same connected parenting tools with them as I can very easily do with her.
I think it goes back to the whole sympathy versus empathy thing we've talked about before, where our sympathy level when a kid from a hard place first comes to our house is really high. Yeah. And like you were saying, it's really easy in those cases to show those kids compassion.
Yeah.
And the longer they're in our house, the more our sympathy levels are going to go down. And that's when we need to start raising our empathy levels to kind of maintain that compassion.
Yeah. For sure.
Because on day one, the behavior is you tie the behavior to the circumstances and reality of the child's life up until that point.
And in some cases, you have to play detective and figure it out, too.
Sure, no doubt. But once we have the same behavior recur for the 100th time, it's like when you tell a child not to run in the house. The first time you inform a small child not to run in the house, you're like, sweetie, don't run in the house. You could run into something and hurt yourself. Fast forward 1 year. If I told you once, I told you 1,000 times, don't run in the house. Fast forward another year. Quit running in the house. How many times do I have to tell you? And
are you sure it's a year between years?
I was being generous. I was rounding up.
but you know, 364 days.
If I'd have told you 10,000 times, you know, the behavior is exactly the same. The kid hasn't done anything differently. Right. They're running in the house. My response to it is the only thing that's changed. And my response has changed because to be honest, I don't want to deal with it. I lose sight of the fact that children only run. My point about the intensity of the intervention isn't just about the, it is both about the moment and about the lifetime, right?
Right.
And so we can't lose sight of the fact that the behaviors are identical, yet I react so much bigger to the same thing. And it's just because my compassion, no, realize running through the house is a silly example. You can pick anything. Mm-hmm. And so often the child's behavior hasn't changed. This is my compassion for the behavior or my desire to deal with the behavior, my ability to be kind, my desire to be kind. Have you ever just got to a moment and thought, you know, I could be kind or I could just be a jerk here. I pick jerk. Mm-hmm. Anybody besides me do that?
No, never.
You know what they say, laughing implies consent. So I think that's tough. You know, I just want to go back to something I said at the beginning about focusing. You know, I was thinking while Kayla was speaking earlier, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I wanted to be an airline pilot when I was a child. And so I will... After the children go to bed and Caitlin waiting to kind of settle down for the evening, I did this the other night, so that's why it's fresh in my mind. I watched a video from the cockpit of pilots landing a 737 in Miami or something. And if you're not like an aviation geek, you'll just think this is a really dumb thing, but they're really fun to watch. And these guys are in communication all the time, and the aircraft's giving them feedback and doesn't look particularly stressed. But then you watch those videos of those guys landing like in high crosswinds in Amsterdam. Mm. They know in advance that the landing is going to be difficult. It's not like the pilot's surprised because he has the data that tells him what the weather is, right?
Right.
They, because the situation is an intense situation, the high crosswinds with the aircraft full of people, their response to the situation is intense too. Mm-hmm. Right, they're working the plane, they're working everything that they need to do, and I think that's, to me, that's a good reminder that when the intensity of operating the aircraft changes, so does the pilot's intensity of response. Mm. Because they know he does not have an option.
Right.
He needs to put the thing on the deck and he needs to get those people down safely. Right. He can't just put the countermeasures for crosswinds button. That doesn't exist yet. And so somebody, a carbon-based life form, has to safely put those hundreds of people down on the ground. And because they recognize that, their intensity of response matches the intensity of the situation. I think sometimes as a parent, I lose sight of the fact that I have to help my child through the moment. Mm-hmm. I have to get the plane on the ground. Because I'm just like, you know what? Fine, just land the plane yourself. Mm. And I think so many times you have that attitude towards our children, and it's just wrong.
Right. Because they're so dysregulated, they can't find the controls for
that's
the
right.
plane to land it, right?
So. That's right.
So, guys, if we want to increase the frequency and intensity of our response when our kids are dysregulated, where should we start?
Well, I would say increasing nurture is probably the first thing. Mm. Which is also the hardest thing.
Right.
Because if the intensity of the behaviors is such that we're going, okay, I've got to increase my, you know, interventions that I'm doing, nurture is not the first one we go to. Mm-hmm. We want to do a correcting tool because we want to correct the behaviors. But I found that when I increase my nurture, I don't have to correct so much. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's hard when I talk to, you know, other moms and we're talking about this and they're like, no, I can't increase my nurture because that's what they want. Mm-hmm. They want all of my time. None of my other children get any time. I spend so much time with them already. And I'm like, yes, but you spend so much time correcting them. Mm-hmm. They're not getting the attention that they want. They're getting attention. Mm-hmm. And you need to give them the attention that they want. And then, or that they need, really.
Right.
They need nurture. And so if we give them the nurture that they need, we find that the behaviors begin to decrease. Mm-hmm. And so I have found just that, just amping up the nurture, which is so hard when you sometimes you get to a point where you're like, this kid is driving me crazy. I don't want to spend any extra time with this child
right.
because they're driving me bananas,
yep.
right? We had a mom that kind of asked, she was like, all my daughter wants to do is watch TV. How am I supposed to nurture a child that only wants to watch TV? Mm-hmm. And we were like, sit with her while she watches TV. You know, that's something we've started doing with our older kids because they really enjoy watching TV is we've started watching some shows with them that maybe the younger kids can't watch. Mm-hmm. And we just sit and watch it now one of ours loves to just ask questions and talk during it, right? We've been watching the show Timeless, mm-hmm. and she is a history junkie. This, our oldest daughter is. She loves history, and so she asks questions about all the historical things that are going on in there. But it's a great time of being able to nurture our kids. I'm not sitting next to her like rubbing her back and, you know, snuggling with her necessarily. We're just sitting on the couch together, mm-hmm. talking, but it's nurturing our relationship.
It's, and it's more presence.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is for our older kids, because they're, you know, they're 12 and 14. And so what they need in terms of nurture is different. Not to say they don't need a hug and they don't need, but nurture looks different for older kids. Mm. And so I think for them, that's one of the things we're finding, is finding that quality time that we can sit with them and be with them, whether it's sitting and having a conversation. You know, I took our 14-year-old son, I took him today to the library, just he and I. We went and had lunch and we went to the library and we did schoolwork. Mm. But I felt really connected to him because it was just the two of us, and we could joke and we could have fun, and there was nobody competing for my attention.
Right.
You know, at home, he can start to irritate all the siblings because he needs a little attention, you know? Mm. And so when I can pull him away, I can be reminded of why he's really a cool kid, mm-hmm. and why I really like hanging out with him. And I can pull him away and I can get that one-on-one time. I can give him some of the nurture that he needs, and then that kind of fills him up, and then the rest of the afternoon's really good, mm. you know? So,
you know, I was thinking about how when you said increasing the nurture and how that helps maybe reduce the frequency and the intensity of the behavior. I know we're probably unique in this regard, but we have mighty struggles at bedtime at our house. So I know nobody listening can relate, but I'll tell the story in any case. Because it is like a conveyor belt of children who come down the stairs with every ailment known to man and some that were invented on the spot. So, you know, our routine here at home is once we kind of get everybody to bed and then get the kitchen cleaned up. And then if we have nothing, you know, sometimes we'll go to the computers and stuff. But sometimes, and we've been trying really, really hard to do this, as much as I like reading and doing things like that, one of my favorite activities when I'm tired after a long day is just to sit next to my wife on the couch and watch a television show together that we enjoy. But a 43-minute episode, you know, with commercials and whatever, so an hour, will generally take us about 75 to 90 minutes to watch if it's the first episode we're watching that night, because one after the other, they'll come down the stairs and whatever. Everybody knows the drill. And we would be like, and I'd be like, you will use Brooklyn because she did it yesterday. Brooklyn, what do you need? Why are you down here? It's past your bedtime. You need to go to bed. And she tries to tell us, and we'd be like, she'd be standing in the living room, and we'd say, honey, you need to go to bed. And 5 minutes later, she'd come back, and we'd do the same. Honey, you need to go to bed. No, just, you need to go to bed. It's past your bedtime. You're going to be grumpy tomorrow. You're going to be tough at school. All those things. You need to go to bed. And then the third time, we're like, Brooklyn, don't come down here again. Well, what we've morphed to doing over the last few months is, and we did it last night, that's what's fresh in my mind. She comes downstairs, we pause the show, and I say, hey, come sit in my lap. Well, what's going on? Tell us. Well, while, and she'll sit in my lap, or she'll sit between us on the couch, and we'll spend just like 90 seconds with her. But it's a real nurturing environment. There's no accusation in my tone. Mm-hmm. I'll rub her back while she talks to Kayla, and she'll hug us and kiss us, and off she goes, and we won't hear from her again. And the interaction by us just pausing and being intentional about what we're doing, being intentional about making that a nurturing moment, being intentional about making sure that Brooklyn understands that she's important to us and that her needs are important to us, has really changed a lot of the bedtime shenanigans in our house. And so now we can get that hour-long show down to like 65 minutes because we're being interrupted once or twice instead of like 10 times.
Right.
And it's amazing how there aren't recurring ailments. We'll say, oh, you know, go get whatever essential oil, and we'll rub it on, you know, on the back of her neck or whatever, and she just responds so well to that. It's like if you give them a house plant and you tell them, look, it's going to need water every day, but don't water it, because giving it water is giving it what it needs. And then the plant dies and they're complaining about how the plant died. Well, nurture and attention to a child is the water they need.
Right.
So water the child. You know, that's why, when, like I said, when people tell me, well, if I give them the attention they want, then it's just going to teach them to behave that way. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Connected parenting should be called counterintuitive parenting. Mm. Because so much of it goes against what you firmly think is true about people. Pause the show, ask Brooklyn to sit on the couch by us in a sweet, kind tone. Ask her, what does she need? She says, well, she's thirsty. Then get up the kitchen, go get your child some water. Don't tell them, go get yourself some water on your way to bed, like we used to. If she says she's hungry, don't remind her that she didn't eat all of her dinner. Go get her a piece of turkey. You know, these are not hard things, but because we want to, because as much as we believe this stuff to be true, and I'm like, I'm tired, my child needs to learn a lesson, so I'm going to engage in a battle over like silliness instead of just going, okay, baby, well, you brushed your teeth, you can't have anything else to eat. Well, that's not a reason for a child not to have food, that they've brushed their teeth, because
they can always brush their teeth again.
It's an amazing thing. We have more toothpaste and a seemingly endless supply of toothbrushes at the house, so and running water. So we're like betting 1,000 in the needs department for toothbrushing. And the fact that the child has already brushed their teeth is like a really bad reason not to give them a piece of turkey. And that's why I think the focus thing is so important, because connected, counterintuitive parenting is intentional parenting, right? To move it from what is not your second nature to what is your second nature, you have to be intentional about it, and you have to be focused, and you have to give your kids what they need, because that is the only way through the valley of the behavior.
That's a real good point there, Ryan, and I think that's a good place for us to wrap up this conversation.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
I'd like to thank Ryan and Kayla for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Chris.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question for us that will fit into 140 characters, you may tweet it to us at TapestryIBC. If you require a bit more room, you can email us at tapestry@irvingbible.org. You may also find us on Facebook at TapestryIBC. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or the Google Play Store. Just search for Tapestry Adoption Podcast. If you have enjoyed and gotten value from this podcast, we would appreciate a review in either location. Empowered to Connect is the training and support community of Tapestry, the adoption and foster care ministry of Irving Bible Church in Irving, Texas. You can check the show notes for relevant links from this episode and find more resources on our website, tapestryministry.org. Thank you for listening.